Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about Elon Musk's battle with the SEC. We've got a new court ruling on Elon's pushback on that case. Also got a few more things to discuss in regard to the pending Twitter acquisition, Ford's earnings report, and a couple of other items as well. Looking at the markets today, well, at least we didn't have the worst day in 18 months again, but the NASDAQ did end up finishing flat after being green most of the day. Tesla was able to hold on to a little bit of gain, finishing up 0.6% to close at $881.51. Might be a little bit of good news in after hours as Facebook or Meta has reported earnings and they were ahead of expectations, so the stock is up more than 10% right now. Then, of course, we also have Apple and Amazon earnings to be reported tomorrow. Ford also reported earnings, and like we had talked about with Amazon, the Rivian stake did cause them to take a hit, but their stock is up after hours as well, so it seemed like that was pretty well absorbed. Hopefully that'll be the case for Amazon earnings as well. Ford kind of led off with that right away with their press release. Makes sense. They recorded a $3.1 billion net loss in the first quarter. However, they noted that that was primarily attributable to valuation of investment in Rivian and that their adjusted earnings before interest and taxes were $2.3 billion. Specifically on their stake in Rivian, they said that at the end of the year, that had been valued at $10.6 billion, and at the end of March, it was valued at $5.1 billion. Of course, Rivian stock has continued to drop, so as it stands right now, most of the way through April, that would be another $2 billion drop in the valuation of their stake in Rivian. So pending what happens the rest of the quarter, that could be another hit for earnings for both Amazon and Ford for Q2. Otherwise, a couple of interesting things from Ford's earnings. They did say that in the most recent quarter, the continuing global shortage of semiconductors held down their production in January and February, but things did improve significantly in March. And they also reiterated their earnings guidance for the year. And one of the underlying assumptions they say for that guidance is including improved semiconductor availability during the second half of this year. With what Tesla has had to say on that, I think it's always worth keeping an eye on what other automakers' comments are as well. All right, next up, we've got a big update on the most recent court battle between Elon Musk and the SEC. Remember, Elon Musk is pushing back on the settlement agreement from the whole Tesla going private saga, among other things that put some restrictions, albeit relatively light restrictions, on Elon Musk's Twitter usage, which is now quite ironic. Fate loves irony, as Elon likes to say, but anyway, this put some restrictions on Elon. Elon not happy with those restrictions, but more than those restrictions, Elon not happy with how the SEC has used those to request information from Tesla or investigate certain actions. So Elon trying to get that quashed. So the court today made a ruling on that case. It was not in favor of Elon. I'm not going to bury the lead there. The court shared its rationale and had some pretty interesting things to say in this ruling. So the court outlines that Musk's argument that this consent decree should be terminated boils down to 3 points. First, the intrusion on his free speech. Second, that the settlement agreement has been misused to launch endless, boundless investigations of his speech. And that third, it was extracted from Musk through the exercise of economic duress. The court says that none of these arguments hold water. So on the first point on free speech, they say that Musk, by entering into the consent decree in 2018, was agreeing to the provision, which required pre-approval of any such written communication, etc. So because he agreed to that at the time, he can't now complain that it violates his free speech rights because there is precedent for people to be able to waive their free speech rights, which is what the court believes that Elon did in this case. On the second point, they go on to say that Musk's argument that the SEC has used the consent decree to harass him and to launch investigations of his speech is likewise meritless, and in this case, particularly ironic. I did have to chuckle a little bit about that. I think they go on to explain that the irony here is that Elon, by agreeing to the settlement, is only putting more restrictions upon himself, and because of the greater amount of restrictions, should be expected to be more closely monitored by the SEC, rather than expecting that that would absolve him of investigation. Framed in that way, I think that makes sense, but I also think Elon's point would just be that even with that considered, he would still view that as excessive, but obviously the court does not agree. The court notes that the SEC can't be faulted for the limited requests it has issued, far from the sheer number of demands that Musk claims the SEC has made. The SEC has in fact made only limited requests, it has made only 3 sets of inquiries. So those are the first 2 points, and then on the third point about Musk being under economic duress to make the settlement, the court says that these arguments are wholly unpersuasive. They note that at the time, Elon Musk was already a multi-billionaire and Tesla was already a Fortune 500 company. To me, that doesn't feel like it should be particularly important because I think we're all aware of how fast things like that can change. But the court does note that even if you set those things aside, and Elon was truly worried that engaging in a protracted litigation with the SEC would be financially ruinous for Tesla and felt that settling the lawsuit was the best thing for the company, that does not establish a basis for him to get out of the judgment he voluntarily signed. The court notes that the fact that a settlement agreement can avoid some of those costs and a negative reaction by shareholders does not mean that it is coercive or unenforceable, basically saying, yep, that's exactly why you would agree to a settlement in the first place, otherwise you'd never have any incentive to settle a case like this. And they basically say that it would set a bad precedent where anybody could just say after the fact that they felt forced to sign a settlement agreement. They wrap up that point with a little bit more snark, and to me, I don't know, it's surprising to see this in court documents, maybe I just haven't read enough, but they say, quote, Musk cannot now seek to retract the agreement he knowingly and willingly entered by simply bemoaning the fact that he felt like he had to agree to it at the time, but now, once the specter of the litigation is a distant memory and his company has become, in his estimation, all but invincible, wishes that he had not, end quote. As for the final ruling, the court says that the motion to quash the subpoena and to terminate the consent decree is denied. So that's how it stands right now. I don't know if Elon will try to appeal that or let it be. But if there's no other further material information that Musk can provide, I think it's going to be pretty tough to expect any different ruling. All right, next up, we've got a couple of quick updates on the pending Twitter acquisition. Twitter last night posted an 8K filing with a little bit more details on how this might go down. There's still no real timeline for this, but one thing I did notice in this filing is that they did say that if it has not been consummated on or before October 24th, then either party at that point could terminate the merger agreement, though there are some carve-outs that say that that date could be extended up to 6 months. So not a ton of information, but at least it kind of establishes a little bit tighter of a window rather than sometime this year. And then the other interesting detail here is that either side could terminate the merger agreement if they pay the other side a termination fee of $1 billion, and that's even for either side. As for the financing, we still don't have any firm details on that. Of course, we still have not seen any Form 4s from Elon confirming any sale of Tesla stock or anything like that. I still think he hasn't, but we'll have more insight tomorrow, though probably not by the time we record, since that could happen afterward. Anyway, regarding the $21 billion that needs to be raised for equity financing, the Financial Times a couple of days ago had a small detail on that, saying that, quote, Musk still has several matters to resolve, the biggest being how he will finance the $21 billion cash component of the offer. People close to the billionaire said he had yet to make a final decision, but was fully aware that he was on the hook and was ready to sell shares in his electric vehicle maker if needed, end quote. So assuming that report is correct, I think obviously that's up for interpretation. My interpretation probably has some bias in it, but to me that would read as, yeah, I know that I can sell some Tesla shares if I need to finance this equity, but it says if needed, and to me that suggests that that is not the primary option, and I'd be very surprised if that is Elon's only option. So if anything, I think that comment would reflect relatively positively, but it's not a direct quote, so not putting a whole lot of weight in it. All right, the last thing on Twitter is just a quick correction. Yesterday we had talked about the mandatory prepayment event for the margin loan that could be caused by a share price event. I had said that to me, it looked like that was happening if the share price dropped by 40% from the funding date closing price. But on another read, thanks to a listener for pointing this out, it looks like that's happening if the share price is below 40% of that closing price. So instead of dropping 40%, that would be dropping 60%. That condition is then much closer in line with the other conditions that we had walked through, so I think that makes sense. And although that is certainly possible, it is quite a bit more cushion than 40% would have been. All right, last item for today is an update from Lucid. Of course, we know that the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund does have a stake in Lucid. Yesterday, Lucid announced that the government of Saudi Arabia has agreed to a purchase of up to 100,000 electric vehicles from Lucid. So hey, that sounds like a pretty big number, but there are a couple of caveats in here. First, this would be over a 10-year period. And then second, this is an order for 50,000 vehicles over that period with an option to add 50,000 more. Not sure exactly what the point of that is. Seems like sometime in the next 10 years, you could probably find an opportunity for another order of 50,000 vehicles. But of course, we do all actually know why, and it's just about the headline. Anyway, 50,000 vehicles over 10 years, and they say initially that's going to be 1,000 to 2,000 vehicles per year. So not really much more to add on that, and that will wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, April 28th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.